Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. This week, I chat with dermatologist Dr. Emma Nwafu-Mensah. Like me, she gets upset by people spreading medical untruths on social media.
But the main reason I started to create content was just there's so much misinformation, people saying things that are just definitely untrue, or also things that are just maybe a bit confusing and slightly sway from the science.
She also finds another trend at the moment particularly galling.
It's completely inappropriate and absurd for children to be using anti-aging skincare.
So please listen to Dr. Emma, a straight-talking, no-nonsense-taking dermatologist, and stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Before Dr. Emma, I want to tell you about a book that I've written that draws on the knowledge of many of the experts that have been on the Relax Back UK show. It contains answers to many of the questions that I've asked them, but also encourages the reader to ask questions about their own health. It is called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health, and is available on Amazon and Kindle. Before I spoke to Dr. Emma, I saw an Instagram post that talks about her journey to become a consultant dermatologist. So my first question was, take us through that journey.
So I am someone that's always known I wanted to be a doctor. Didn't always know I wanted to be a dermatologist, but always knew I wanted to be a doctor. So I went to medical school at the age of 18. So I went for 6 years. That includes 5 years of medicine and then an extra year where you can do a separate degree. And I did mine in management, which gave me lots of extra skills. And then after that, you go to your foundation training, which is 2 years. And I rotated through lots of different specialties. And luckily, I had a 4-month rotation in dermatology and I absolutely loved it. So that's when I decided that I wanted to become a dermatologist. So that would have been, 2016, 2017. And then after that, I actually took a year out of clinical medicine to teach. So I'm really passionate about teaching. I went to Imperial to teach medical students for a year. And I got a few teaching qualifications through that. Then after that, I did 2 years of medicine training and then 4 years of dermatology training. So the whole thing takes about 15 years.
It's a long time, isn't it? But by the look of you, it looks like you're glad you did it.
Yeah, I am.
I've got another question from that actually. On the same post, exams taken at 223 billion. Now I've got a feeling that must be a misprint, or it just felt like that.
It's just a slight exaggeration. It's a very slight one.
Do you feel examined out? Are you going to have to take any more?
Not at the moment, standardly. I may choose to. I think lots of doctors say, oh, I'm not going to study anymore. But then, you know, something will come across something interesting. We may end up doing some.
If you go on to do a PhD, have you got in the program?
No, so I'm not planning to do a PhD. So some people have interests in, usually people have one or two interests, separate interests. My one is teaching. So that's why I took a year out to do some teaching and did some teaching qualifications. And then my second interest is, you know, leadership and management. And that's why I did that degree. So I'm not very research heavy. So of course I do research, but I'm not really planning to do a PhD.
Yeah. All right. I get it. So you are a very busy person.
Yeah.
So which brings me on to the first kind of technical question, really. And there's this rule, you shouldn't really ask a question if you don't really have some idea of the answer. So I'm breaking that straight off, because I must admit, I don't know that I really understand what a dermatologist does. To do with skin. So tell us.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. It's not an unusual question at all. So dermatologists look after all conditions of the skin, but also the hair and nails, which a lot of people don't realise. And that includes, one of the things I love most about dermatology is how varied it is. So in my NHS work, probably the bulk, maybe 50% of the work is skin cancer. That's obviously a really important thing that we do. We look after skin cancers in terms of diagnosis and treatment. And the treatment for skin cancer is surgery. So we do surgery as well. That's something people don't know. Dermatologists do our own surgery. And then we look after a lot of inflammatory skin conditions. So that's eczema, psoriasis, and inflammatory conditions of the scalp that cause hair loss, inflammatory conditions of the nails. And then we also do other things. One other thing that's quite unique about dermatology is we look after adults and children. So we look after people of all ages, from neonates to the elderly. And then there are over 2,000 dermatological diagnoses. So we look after so many different conditions. And then, of course, you have the cosmetic side, which I actually don't do that much of, but there's lots of things in terms of cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology. Skincare, I do lots of, do give lots of skincare advice. So it's super, super varied. If you meet two dermatologists, they won't do the same thing. Everyone has different interests and they focus on different aspects and subspecialties within dermatology. Lots of different areas to get into. Another one of my subspecialties is hair, so I look after a lot of patients with hair loss as well.
Okay. So one thing I've picked up there is a couple of things that though you mentioned, bad cases of eczema and all the rest of it. These are things that are really wreck people's lives. I mean, the people that suffer from these things badly, their lives are just miserable. So, I mean, you have an opportunity to really, really help people.
Absolutely. One of the things I love most about dermatology is just when you help to treat a condition, it has such a huge impact on the person's life. Everyone can see a person's skin. If someone's got heart failure, you can't see it from looking at them. But you can see when they have skin conditions that affect exposed parts from their skin, and it affects a person's life in its entirety. So, their social functions, how they work, their self-esteem. And treating those conditions is just really satisfying as a dermatologist. So that's one of the things I love about my specialty.
And actually remembering back to my biology teacher when I did O level, because I'm old, I did O levels, not GCSEs. One of the few facts I remember is that the skin is our biggest organ.
Exactly, yeah. And a lot of people don't know that. So,
So it's vital, and it keeps everything in and keeps what shouldn't be getting in out. It does a
Exactly.
lot.
Yeah, exactly. It's very important.
Now on the news release I got, you're described actually as an influencer. Now, I suspect you've got potentially a bit of a bone to pick with some fellow influencers. So what kind of is what is that? What's the your beef with some influencers?
I wouldn't say I have beef with influencers, but I think there are lots of people online pushing information that isn't entirely true. And that's actually what the reason I started to create content. I never really had a plan to be an influencer. It's not something that I would actually use to describe myself, but of course I understand what people mean when they say that. But the main reason I started to create content was just there's so much misinformation. People saying things that are just definitely untrue, or also things that are just maybe a bit confusing and slightly sway from the science. And I think it just places a lot of people, especially young people, but of course the whole population, puts a lot of people at risk of making health decisions according to information that is not sound.
Yeah. Well, I mean, forget slightly incorrect. Some of it is just downright dangerous, isn't it? I mean, there's some awful stuff online.
100%, yeah, really, really dangerous things. And I think for some reason, specifically with skincare and dermatology, almost everyone thinks that they can be an expert. I think people might think twice about, well, even not necessarily, but people may think a bit harder before, speaking about more intricate things. For example, let's say like before trying to talk about the heart or the brain, even though that's not entirely true. But I think specifically dermatology, because it seems to be, like so accessible, and everyone just can portray themselves as an expert without really having done, much reading or having much experience at all.
And actually, that there's no sort of legal comeback. I could set up on Instagram this afternoon saying, Mike Dilk, I'm an expert in your skin and dermatology. Ask me any questions you like, and I'm be perfectly allowed to do that, wouldn't I?
There's no law protecting that. Even to the point, there actually isn't, there aren't laws protecting the term dermatologist. So there are people calling themselves dermatologists online. They're not dermatologists. So
Yeah.
it's a dangerous place.
So it's not, so dermatologist is not a protected title.
Not in the UK, no.
Okay, now that's that could be pretty serious. Okay, so in particular, what you found is that children are quite often using kind of skincare products and skincare regimes that they've been kind of persuaded to do this by social media and all the rest of it. And quite often this stuff is completely inappropriate and unnecessary. Is that's the kind of thing you've come across and has kind of, you're thinking, hang on, this isn't right.
Absolutely,
Can you give us some examples of the sort of things you've come across that you're thinking, really shouldn't be happening?
sure. I think a lot of it is somewhat indirect. I don't think that, well, I don't know for sure, but it doesn't necessarily seem that brands are specifically targeting children. But when brands are creating packaging that's, very trendy, very colorful, it is going to be attractive to young people. Specifically anti-aging skincare, it's completely inappropriate and absurd for children to be using anti-aging skincare. And that includes things like retinols and retinoids. Young skin is not catered for such harsh ingredients.
I'm going to have to just pause you there. You met retinols, retinoids. What are they, and what are they meant to do for us?
Apologies. So, retinoids in general is an umbrella term used for vitamin A derivatives that are used in skincare, either as creams, lotions, serums, but also we have prescribed retinoids that people take orally.
Okay.
Now, retinoids as a whole is not a complete ban for young people. We use them in the treatment of acne all the time, and that's when it's prescribed by a medical professional. But retinols can sort of be thought of as weaker versions, which can be bought over the counter by anybody. And they are useful for acne, in which case there are adolescents that may use them, but otherwise they're useful for anti-aging, treating hyperpigmentation. And a child doesn't have those problems. A child that hasn't gone through puberty yet probably doesn't have acne. They're not going to have wrinkles, dark marks. So it's inappropriate for them to be using these things over the counter. It's a different way of them being using when it's being prescribed by a healthcare
Yeah.
professional.
I mean, are these anti-aging creams actually appropriate even in, someone like me who is kind of wrinkly? I'm 58. I've been in the sun a lot. They're just a load of hokum, aren't
I think that there are definitely some creams that are helpful in terms of reducing the visible signs of aging. I think that's probably another conversation. There
they?
are
Yeah.
there is a yeah there is a movement towards we should stop using the words anti-aging and just about promoting healthy aging and things like that, because of course some people develop wrinkles and it's totally fine, but there are some people that want to maybe reverse some of the signs that have been caused by them getting a bit older or being in the sun. And I think that's totally fine if that is what you choose to do and that's what's important to you.
Yeah.
But it's just inappropriate for young people.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. That's a whole other episode. I'll have to invite you back to talk about that. But as far as kids go, yeah, completely inappropriate. You don't have to have anti-aging stuff when you're a teenager. You're it's just an utter nonsense, isn't
Yeah,
it?
it's upset.
But what is that the main sort of thing that you have found kids and teenagers have been applying, or are there other sorts of lotions and potions that they've been using?
No, yeah, there are loads of different things. And I think even one of the main issues is not necessarily that an individual product is inappropriate for a young child, but there are children that just want to use so many. There's people promoting this 10-step skincare routine online. Nobody needs a 10-step skincare routine, regardless of how old you are. But there are people that want, there are children that are falling into this trap and thinking that they need to use, three or four different toners and then two different moisturizers, two different cleansers, and creating these really long, elaborate routines that are A, expensive, and that's going to be putting parents under pressure to, if their children are wanting these things. And B, if you're flooding your skin with too many products, even if that one product is not necessarily inappropriate, if you're using too many, that can cause problems in the future. And then there's just, the time. Do we want our children to be spending hours and hours doing their skincare every night? There's probably other things we prefer for them to be doing, spending time in nature, reading, going outside, that sort of thing. So it's a very complex, the whole sphere of it is quite complex. There are different parts of it that cause concerns for different reasons.
So, have you got a feel for what age children are starting doing this?
Yeah, I think it's differs, but I have heard statistics children as young as 10 have been using anti-aging skincare. And it
Oh,
will, of
goodness
course,
me.
differ according to what they've been exposed to, etc. But yeah, it is, young children.
And boys as well as girls?
Both sexes, yeah.
Yeah. I've actually got some data on this because I've got a 14-year-old boy. And he, neither me or my wife, spend ages with loads of skincare regimes, and certainly not this 10-step hair regime you talk about. But he will lock himself away in the bathroom and apply all kinds of stuff to his face, even though we're saying, do you really need to do this? So yeah, I get it as being an issue. I'm sort of living through it to some extent as a dad. Now, you mentioned that these can cause problems. What kind of problems? And as a dermatologist, do you find yourself treating children that have damaged themselves?
The station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
There are a number of different causes that using incorrect or too many skincare products can cause. I think firstly, there's just causing irritation. And this is a big problem. If your face is irritated, it's red, it's sore, you can't concentrate, it's itchy. And then the problem with an irritated face is people then try to correct the irritation with more products and they get caught in this awful cycle.
Vicious circle, yeah.
Yeah. So the way the skin works, like you said, it keeps things, the good things in and the bad things out. The way to describe the skin, the outer layer of the skin is called the skin barrier. And quite a useful way to think of that is to think of it as like a brick wall, where the bricks in the barrier are your skin cells. And then in between, you've got a mixture of like fats and oils that your skin uses to keep the bricks together. Now, the problem is if you keep putting irritated products on that skin, so the outer layer of skin, your skin barrier, that brick wall starts to fall apart. That mixture of fats and lipids that holds the bricks together starts to be disrupted. And then once that opens, it allows bad things in and it allows you to lose moisture, and that skin gets more and more irritated and dry. And then people think, well, I need to use more products. My skin's really dry. And then it gets worse and worse and worse when actually all they needed to do was to stop using too many products in the first place. So that's
Right.
one problem. A second problem is allergies. So people think of allergies as, oh, I've eaten something and then I'm allergic to it. And I know straight away because it's that thing that I ate. But actually, with the skin, it's quite the opposite. It's the more you expose your skin to a certain ingredient or a certain product, after a while, your immune system learns about that thing. And then at whichever point it decides, which is completely unpredictable, it then tells you that I'm allergic to this, that you're allergic to it. And the problem with that, that latency period of when you use the product and when you develop the allergy, it means people don't know what they're allergic to because it might be something that they've been using for years. And then again, they're in this cycle of they keep using the thing and they're like, it can't be that because I've been using it for years, but actually it is that specific product. So it is better to, just not expose yourself to too many things in the first place. In particular, products that include a lot of fragrance and essential oils are risky for causing these contact allergies.
To just keep the chances of an allergy down.
Yeah, just don't, you don't have to introduce so many things into your skin.
Goodness me. This could potentially become quite complicated quite quickly, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And essentially, what's driving it? Is it just this is, some companies are making a lot of money out of this.
Yeah. I think in terms of what's driving this, if you want to call it a crisis, if there's lots of different things, but I think definitely we have to speak about the role of social media and the rise of paid partnerships with skincare, which are not, I don't think that the influencers necessarily are to blame. That's their livelihood, that's where they're making their living. But I think there's just so much being pushed out. And I think it's up to us as adults to help our children be able to decipher, what are ads and what are not. And we need to know that people who are making content online, they have to make content. That's how they eat. They have to make content. They need to talk about products. But that doesn't mean that as me, as a consumer of content, that means that that doesn't mean that I need to, do everything that they're saying or use everything that they're saying. You need to understand that they got all those products for free and they probably only use it a couple of times and then they stop. You don't necessarily need to go and buy every single product that you see online. So I think social media is playing a huge role. I think there's quite a lot of peer pressure sometimes from maybe people who are using skincare. Maybe they've learned things from their older siblings or their parents, and then they're sharing it amongst their friendship groups. And those who are maybe more prone to being influenced are being influenced negatively. And then I think also there's a lot to be said about people thinking that they need to look perfect all the time, which again is down to social media and other forms of media where they're constantly seeing their influencers who, always look amazing. Maybe they've got a makeup team that, gets them ready every day. Maybe their images are photoshopped or they use filters. But as a young person looking at that kind of content, they might not always think, well, that person probably spent 4 hours getting ready because that's their job. Or, that person's pictures have been, photoshopped, whatever. People don't necessarily think that way. They just see an ideal and then they try to reach that ideal, even though it's, it was never going to be attainable in the first place. So I think it's really difficult being a young person, in 2024. There's just a lot of pressure from lots of different avenues.
You're kind of sort of picking at a problem, which is, this is not a I can't say it, dermatological medical problem, is it?
No.
This is something which is much, much bigger than that. This is a kind of societal problem. And what you were
Absolutely.
saying, how, influences have to make a influencers have to make a living, etc. Well, yeah, people should be allowed to make a living, but if what they're doing is interpreted by children as well as adults, adults should be able to make their own decisions. We're old enough to make our own decisions, but I can't help thinking if some of these things are going to be seen by kids, possibly even aimed at kids, whether they are or not is a is another question. Maybe something should be, and this is not an easy question, an easy way to thing to do. Maybe social media companies should be made to step in and do something. I'm not quite sure what they could do, but any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I think that I think it's probably too much to put all the pressure on the influencers themselves. And I think, even myself as a dermatologist, I create content about products. Of course I do. It's skincare. That's my thing. And I think that we can't really expect the influencers to know, you know, they don't know exactly how all of their content is going to be perceived by every person, regardless of their age. So I definitely agree with you that I think the social media platforms themselves should step up. So we saw, for example, during COVID, we saw Instagram and TikTok be quite hard on misinformation and, you know, place alerts and things like that. I think we need a similar thing with this sort of issue where, I don't know how they would do it, but maybe, you know, certain ads are not shown at a certain time, or maybe there are just messages that say this product is not suitable for a person under this age. I'm not sure exactly how they would execute it, but I do definitely think that something needs to be done. And then I also think that even at a governmental level, something needs to be done. These conversations need to be had, not just because of this issue with skincare that we're talking about, but we know that there are children being bullied online. There's, you know, being the more time you spend online as a child can correlate with your mental health and the quality of your mental health. So I think definitely high level conversations need to be had so that we can protect our young people. We've seen it being done in other countries. And I think the UK needs to follow suit and decide, you know, how best we can do something.
Well, I'm sure I came across some statistics that was talking about how much health information the general population gets from social media, particularly for young people. So this is like not talking to doctors that know what they're talking about, going straight to social media. And the percentage was, I can't remember what it was. It was enormous. It was like 60% of young people get their first information if they've got a worry, some sort of health worry, online, on social media. I can't remember what the figure was exactly, but I remember it absolutely horrified me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising because, for example, if I want to go on holiday, I'm going to go on social media to look for reviews about different countries and what to see. I think the way in which the world is moving, people are using social media more and more. You know, maybe a similar conversation would have been had however many decades ago when people were talking about the internet. They're like, why do people use the internet? Because it's what's accessible. And I think that what we need, I think we can't ignore that this is happening, but what we need is to have more reputable information online. So I know that social media is not for everyone, not for all healthcare professionals. Most of my colleagues don't want to be on social media. But for those that do, like, I really encourage it. I think we need much more of us online to be able to at least try to drown out some of the misinformation. We need more reputable voices online so that at least we can at least have a bit of balance, because there's, you know, we can't pretend that people aren't going to use social media for their health information. They're using social media for everything. So we just need to make sure that we have some good voices online.
Yeah.
And also, I think also it's not easy to speak to a doctor these days. The NHS is in a crisis. So you can't pick up the phone and ask your GP a simple question. You're going to look for other avenues. So we definitely need more reputable, not just faces and, you know, personalities, individuals, but also organizations who put out a lot of health information. And that's also what we do with the House of Medics.
Yeah, good point. And actually, maybe turn it around. We all need to be just a little more questioning and a little less trusting of everything everyone tells us, and maybe just ask a few questions. You know, question number one I'm thinking of, okay, what are your qualifications? Because my experience, most people with appropriate qualifications are very happy to be asked that and very happy to tell people what they are.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And not everybody that speaks with conviction necessarily has the backing of, you know, their experience doesn't necessarily match their conviction or their learning. Yeah. I don't think one needs to have a degree necessarily, but, you know, what makes you, what have you read, you know, what allows you to speak in this way?
Or they should be very upfront about if they're getting paid, how they're making money. If they're making money from some particular product, that needs to be front and center of whatever screen they are talking on, I think.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Now, you touched on something else then. You mentioned it. House of Medics. Yeah, tell us a bit about that, because that's obviously something that you are, you set up and you're quite passionate about.
Yeah, so it's something that I set up with, it's actually, so the co-founders are myself, my husband, and one of our friends who's a pharmacist. And we set it up towards the end of 2020 during the pandemic. We just realized that actually so many healthcare professionals are really quite isolated and they don't have that community. So the first aim was to create a platform that was a community for all healthcare professionals. So not just doctors, but anyone that works in the healthcare space, to have an area where they can meet other healthcare professionals, network, and just learn from one another. And then from there, we also started our mentorship scheme. So we help students that want to get into different healthcare careers. We pair them with mentors so that they can be able to know, you know, how to navigate that. I'm the first doctor in my family and I didn't have anyone around me to really hold my hand. And it just would have been so much easier if I had someone that I could contact. And then after we established ourselves as a community, what we really wanted to do was to put out good quality healthcare information. And it works that we, with the community that we have, we then give them the platform to come and speak about what they do. So on our YouTube channel, we've got well over 200 videos from different healthcare professionals, and whatever topic they're speaking on, they're speaking on what they do day to day. They're speaking on whatever they've studied and, you know, what they do professionally. So people know that anything that's being said on the House of Medics is by someone who knows what they're talking about, and it's a source of trustworthy information. So that's something we're really passionate about, just reaching out to the world so that everyone can actually hear some information that they can trust and run with it.
Right. So if you get information from House of Medics, it is from fully qualified MDs.
Mm. Yeah, not all doctors, but yeah.
Are people that are fully qualified in a position where they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So if people thinking, all right, that sounds worth having a look at, how can they sort of get onto that? What's the website for that?
Yeah, so our website is houseofmedics.org. So that's houseofmedics.org.uk. And then, .org. Okay. And then we're on all social media platforms. So YouTube, House of Medics, and then Instagram and TikTok. Our handle is We Are House of Medics.
And does that include help for skin problems, dermatological questions as well?
Yeah, so I create lots of content on our platforms as well.
So that is the place to go if people are listening and have skin questions, particularly if they're worried about children that are, you know, putting all kinds of stuff on their face.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, very, very good. Right, final question. Would you suggest someone follow a career like yours as becoming an MD and then specifically becoming a dermatologist? Would you recommend that to a young person?
Yeah, I mean, I would. I think it's quite tricky pushing medicine in the UK at the moment. I think it's been difficult. It's been a really difficult year for the NHS in terms of doctors going on strike and then all the other healthcare professionals going on strike. But I think for a lot of people that want to become doctors, they've wanted to do it for a long time, or they sincerely feel that that is the career for them. So once you become a doctor, I think dermatology is a great specialty for anyone who wants a varied life, who loves seeing different sorts of things, who is a very visual person. So that's one thing I love about dermatology. It's quite visual. You like to do a bit of surgery as well as a bit of medicine. You want to do something where you really impact a person's life. We deal with lots of chronic conditions as well, which is really nice. You're able to follow your patients up and build great relationships with them. So yeah, I love dermatology. I think it's a great specialty. It's definitely not for everybody. But I would also say if any young person wants to get into medicine, maybe don't worry too much about the specialty straight away. Just get in, have a feel for all the different things, see your rotations, and then it often becomes clear where you'll fit later on.
Okay. Dr. Emma, look, thank you so much for chatting. This is obviously an important area. You know, it's affecting a lot of people, a lot of children at the moment. And also thanks for telling us about House of Medics as well, because that covers all kinds of things, not just dermatology. So thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat.
Thanks. Can I also tell you about like a really great resource where people can get more information?
Please do.
Specifically on this and other things as well. So Coats Skincare has a platform where you can basically go on Snapchat. And I think the fact that it's on Snapchat is really great because it allows young people to use a platform that they're already using. We know that lots of young people are on Snapchat and they can literally go on there and sent an anonymous question, sorry, not anonymous, but private. It's a private question to the Coat Skincare platform, and they get a response from a dermatologist, which I think is, I don't think there's anything else like it in the UK. And they get a response within, I think, 48 hours or so.
Okay, so what
on the other end?
What's Coats? That's a pharmaceutical company or a?
It's a skincare brand, so it's quite a new skincare brand. But what I love about them is they're quite catered to young people. So all their products are, you know, I was talking about fragrance products earlier. All their products are fragrance free, simple. They make skincare very simple and accessible. And this specific thing they have, it's called DM a Derm on Snapchat, is I don't see any other brands doing that, where you can actually just send in a question, get an answer from a dermatologist. It's reputable information. And because it's private, you know, you can ask whichever question you like without risk of someone seeing it. You can also send in pictures about specific questions you have. So I think it's a really great resource that more people should know about.
Okay. All right. No, that sounds useful as well. All right. Very fine. Dr. Emma, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much to my guest this week, Dr. Emma. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena-sensitive care pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.